You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to the Political Cesspool Radio Program, our live broadcast for the evening of Saturday, September the 27th. I'm your host, James Edwards, and we're gearing up for another very busy night of hard-hitting talk radio here in TPC, broadcasting live from Memphis, Tennessee, as always, and going out to our AM affiliates and FM affiliates, courtesy of the Liberty News Radio Network, simulcasting online as well. At thepoliticalcesspool.org, where we ask you to tune in and liberate your mind. We're going to be covering a lot of news tonight. There is a lot of news to cover this week, including, I don't know if you've heard about this or not yet, folks, but Winston Smith clued me into it a day or two ago. A savage decapitation has taken place on American soil. It was conducted by a black Muslim man upon his co-worker right here in Oklahoma in the United States of diversity. We're going to be talking about that in the second hour of tonight's live broadcast, and then a lot more to come in the third hour. First hour, there are a couple of things. I'm taking it all to myself to share with you two excellent pieces that we posted at thepoliticalcesspool.org this week. I'm going to break them down. Two of the most, I think, to the point articles that we will have ever presented by the time I get done with this first hour. But first, I want to go back quickly to the mailbag. A lot of emails have come in, as they always do, in between the week that follows our live broadcast every Saturday night. This one in from Sweden, of course. We had Jonas DeGeer on live from Scotland. He is, of course, a Swedish national, but now living in Scotland. He was talking about the secession vote that took place in Scotland a week and a half ago. Gentleman from Sweden writes that he stayed up all night last Saturday to listen to the show. He said it was brilliant, as always, and that he learns to appreciate more Jonas DeGeer each time he's on the Political Cesspool, and how lucky they are in Sweden to have such an intellectual in the movement. He continues to write that apart from the pro-white view of things on the Political Cesspool, that he also appreciates our Christian approach that we put forth, something that's very uncommon in Sweden nowadays. It's really comforting to hear you say, he writes, God bless you, or may God be with you, my friend. Here in Sweden, where all of our history, traditions, and almost everything else that could inspire some kind of white pride is abolished, for example, our head of church, a Protestant denomination there in Sweden, could not even, when running for election, say that Jesus Christ was more important to her than Mohammed. Now, this is the head of the church there in Sweden. Can you fathom that? She's supposed to be the spiritual leader of Sweden, but couldn't even say publicly that Jesus was more important to her than Muhammad. He writes that he was actually studying a theology, this listener writes, to become a priest at one of Scandinavia's oldest universities, Uppsala University, which is held to be somewhat conservative, at least more than the other universities in Sweden. But to this writer's dismay, there were a lot of homosexuals attending this college, and he understood after a while that his more traditional beliefs weren't held in very high esteem, so he left. He concludes the letter by writing and encouraging us to keep on doing what we're doing, and he's sure that the following in Sweden will grow. And we hope that it will. Thank you so much, my friend, for writing it and for staying up overnight in Sweden to listen to the show live last week. The sacrifices that our audience gives us in terms of just tuning in, I guess, but certainly with their prayerful support and contributions is one for the books. And for 10 years, we've been making history on this show, and we're very proud of that and certainly thankful for everyone who's made it possible, whether they're here in Memphis, Tennessee, where our flagship station is located, or here in the South, our immediate region, across the country or around the world. Political Cesspool fans tune in every night live or throughout the week thanks to the broadcast archives, and we continue to build something very, very special as we are bridging the gap between establishment conservatism and our more muscular brand of politics. I actually had another fellow from Sweden send me a picture, a very interesting picture of a lapel pin that intertwined the Swedish national flag and the Confederate flag. I'd never seen that before. I've seen them here in the United States, of course, with the American flag and the Confederate flag intertwined, and you can buy those and wear them on your suit lapel. But this one with the Swedish flag, so very interesting. And listen, as the audience continues to grow, we continue to be so very proud and so very blessed to have the confidence of so many. And your endorsements serve as your voice here on the mainstream radio airwaves. Of course, over the course of these last 10 years, a lot has been written and said about the political cesspool, not the least of which on this very broadcast itself, but of course, any number of mainstream news outlets, whether it be television, newspapers, magazines, other radio programs, and of course, all of the far leftist blogs have taken the swipe at us at one time or another. And so I came across an article that was written by a man who uses the pen name Yggdrasil. And Yig is actually a friend of mine. He writes for the Occidental Quarterly. I actually talked to him earlier this week about another matter of business. But I found something that he'd written a few years ago. And sometimes you just come across something that's so good, there it would be impossible to improve upon it. And I don't typically like to read things verbatim on the radio. I don't want to come across as lazy. You know, we always like to take an article and perhaps read a couple of excerpts and then offer our commentary and take on it. But this, I think it, if I was charged with the task of writing a bullet point list of why it is that we do what we do, it would have been impossible for me to have improved upon that which this gentleman has written. So I'm actually going to share it with you now because I feel the exact same as he does, and I think that this could also, in fact, serve as a perhaps an updated statement of principles for the political cesspool in some shape, form, or fashion. But here are our concerns. What are our concerns? What concerns do we have that motivate us to take action? Well, first of all, we are concerned with the relentless policies in pursuit of cheap labor, which result in falling living standards for our children and grandchildren, and increasing costs of welfare as low wages cause millions to opt for leisure over work. We are concerned about the relentless demonization of white people, which results in, of course, the ideological justification for racially motivated attacks and ethnic cleansing of neighborhoods. And furthermore, the bloc voting in favor of tax, welfare, and preference policies burdening European Americans. And you certainly have that. This relentless demonizing of whites in the media makes this rampant and epidemic, out-of-control black-on-white violence problem that we have justified. I mean, they believe that they are justified in taking these actions of savagery against whites because they, like whites at some point in their history, suffered slavery. We are concerned with the relentless media stereotyping of white Americans, which of course results in the conditioning of competing racial groups to think that successful white businessmen are criminals, and it also conditions whites to think of themselves as lazy, stupid, thus accepting their subordinate status in our multicultural society. We're going to take a break, and I'll share with you more of our concerns and what we deserve, what we feel as though we deserve, right after this.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour. There's something really fun and exciting about discovering products that make life more pleasant and enjoyable. Well, Miracle 2 soaps definitely fit that description. The shelves at the supermarket are packed with soaps and cleansers that are full of chemicals that slowly destroy our health and the environment. Miracle 2 products are all natural, like their green soap that can replace your bath, laundry, household soaps, and cleaning products. And please try Miracle 2's skin lotion. It's quickly absorbed and not greasy like all those other mass-produced lotions. Miracle 2 Moisturizer is full of fabulous oils and emollients that leave the skin healthy and baby soft. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. Just call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. You'll learn why so many people say it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
A backpack is more than just a bag, it's a statement. Whether you're a student or a professional, are traveling the world or commuting to work, Teton Sports offers a wide variety of backpacks, each of which is lightweight and durable. The book bag backpacks weigh only 1.5 pounds and come in solid pink, blue, red, or black. The session bags have eye-catching designs, adding a touch of style in pink and white or in black. Each is great for kids or adults who need a versatile, resilient, and eye-catching bag. The professional and the executive are sleek, sturdy backpacks with numerous uses. Whether you're hiking in the mountains or packing for an important business trip, these bags have plenty of room. Not only are the backpacks comfortable and lightweight, but they're large enough to fill all your needs. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, duffels, tents, cots, camp pads, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, folks, so hopping right back into it, I'm going down a list now just to make it clear for our friends and foe alike what it is that concerns us, what it is that we believe we deserve, and what it is that we feel as though we can do about this situation. But to continue on with the list of concerns that we have, certainly I am concerned about the relentless discrimination against white Americans based on their skin color, which results in two things. Number one, talented white children earning less valuable college degrees from less prestigious universities, and talented whites regulated to lower paying jobs than they would qualify for if their skin were a different color. Now, are these concerns that are born out of a hatred for someone else or for, as we always say, equal rights for all, special privileges for none? Are these legitimate concerns, unlike the hysterical cries of phantom racism that we hear from other people in other communities? You answer the question. I hope it's a rhetorical one. Another concern that we have, and then I'm going to get into what it is I believe we deserve. A concern, though, is that if discrimination against whites is this pervasive, while we are still a majority, I ask you this: how severe will the consequences be when our children and grandchildren become minorities in this a country that our people founded and carved from a wilderness? What is the probability that the escalating demands for racial demonizing, collective punishment, and reparations will increase once whites fall to a minority status? Those are all, and I know it stemmed from the end of the first segment into the beginning of this, the second segment of the first hour, but those are concerns that really animate this radio program. Now, what is it that we think we deserve? Do we think that we deserve to be entitled to privileges just based upon the fact that we were born white? No, absolutely not. But I do believe that we deserve a halt to widespread discrimination based upon the color of our skin. We deserve admission to colleges based solely on objective academic performance and test results with the same standards applied to everyone. We also feel as though hiring based on objective test and performance criteria should be applied equally. We feel as though we deserve a halt to the relentless drive for cheap labor. that businesses should stop outsourcing American jobs to Asia, stop immigration as long as unemployment exceeds 5% of the workforce, stop issuance of H-1B work visas for technical jobs, decrease immigration and cut welfare benefits so that all Americans will take available jobs, limiting the demand for illegal immigration and decreasing the welfare burden at the same time. We feel as though we deserve a restoration of meaningful democracy. Meaningful democracy. And I have said this before, and I'll say it again. There should absolutely be a restoration of very basic and simple literacy and issue awareness tests for voting. Now, people will, of course, scream that, that's going to disenfranchise blacks. It'll be across the board. I mean, you should have at least basic, second grade knowledge of government and civics, and at least a very loose handle on the positions of the candidates. And this would wipe out a lot of white people voting too. I think voting is a privilege. It is a privilege to be able to vote. And unfortunately, you have a lot of ignorant people. You see all these, interviews that Mark Dice does, these man on the streets interviews. This is a miscarriage of liberty in a way that people have taken for granted the right to vote to such an extent. Well, most people don't vote anyway, but the ones that do, I mean, how many people do you think really go in and vote that have any idea about what they're doing? Now, I'm not saying that everyone should be in agreement with me on the issues, that it's an ideologically based test. You have to be a conservative. You have to be a constitutionalist to go vote. No, you can be a Marxist. You can be anything, but you need to at least be able to pass a very basic test, I believe, and they used to have those. What can we do about these problems? We need to educate people, the members of our extended family, and giving the geographic system of representation in the United States and the demographic Big Sort, Republicans can control Congress for a very long time if they would abandon the big tent philosophy and begin motivating their own base. I feel as though we need effective political motivation, and that demands an identifiable them. Now, let me explain what I'm talking about here. Our competing racial groups have an identifiable them in their stereotype of evil and undeserving white men. We need our own identifiable them, which is, of course, those who benefit from the current repression of whites under the regime of multiculturalism. Then the trick is to make them apparent to our own people without inflaming and motivating our opponents. We should not name them explicitly. Rather, we advance policies that directly thwart the extractions and benefits they get from us, quote-unquote, thus generating the kind of policy-oriented anger that will motivate and unify our people. Universalist abstractions such as traditional values and lower taxes do not focus on the identifiable them. The big tent is dead. It's time to get over it. And we need to starve the beast. We need to starve the beast, this beast of consumerism. We need to begin purchasing generic foods and avoiding the brand names which provide advertising revenue to our enemies in the media. We need to stop watching professional sports, or at least worshiping at the altar of professional sports, thereby denying the media the eyeballs upon which their ad revenue depends. And I have said before, and I say again, yes, on occasion I tune in to a basketball game or a football game. I think that you can't eat, live, and breathe the cause and the battle. You can't live a life on the front lines. You have to have a furlough every now and then, have a departure from this and relax. But all things in moderation, nothing in excess. That was a saying by the Greeks, which is eternally true. Cancel your satellite subscriptions, thereby depriving television content providers of a vital stream of revenue. If 50% of our people were to lock up their credit cards for 5 months, the system would have no choice but to accede to our demands. We need to condition our people to avoid the false sensations of evolutionary fitness that the consumer role provides, and seek instead real sensations of evolutionary fitness produced by, in the case of males, a job, a wife, children, no debt, and substantial savings and investment. In the case of females, the exact opposite, a husband, children, and job skills that provide that can provide in an emergency, being a good homemaker, no credit card debt. Exploit the fragility of the service economy. Wash your own car, mow your own lawn, clean your own house, cook your own meals, select your own entertainment. Subscribe to Netflix if you must, but cancel the cable, cancel the satellite, and save money. Don't waste it all on entertainment. Don't fall into this trap of bread and circus. If we're going to behave like the new Rome, we're going to pay the price that Rome paid. And that includes disproportionate amount of time and interest in entertainment. And, of course, opening the gates to everybody else but those who built the civilization. And we need to also, of course, form local associations for mutual aid and support. Identify those with talents and skills and provide mutual aid and assistance to other members of the group to counteract, to the extent possible, the disabilities imposed on us by multiculturalism. And what kind of disabilities are we talking about? Well, again, in addition to the constant shaming and blaming that is heaped upon our people and the guilt that is you know, intended to be imposed upon us, we're talking very seriously about our own lives in so many cases, so many you couldn't possibly, you know, cover them all in a three-week show, in a three-hour show every week. I mean, if we just talked about black-on-white crimes or minority-on-white crimes, we'd talk about nothing else, and we wouldn't even scratch the surface in a seven-day period each week of the examples that we could draw from. Well, folks, this article, why we do this, what are our concerns, what do we deserve, what can we do, it's all broken down for you. I read most of it just then at the top of the show, and then in this, the second segment. You can read it for yourself at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Those concerns, not coming from a place of hatred, but from a very legitimate sense of self-preservation. Print it out, share it with your friends. We'll be back with more right after this.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin, just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
The Occidental Quarterly fills a unique niche in bringing together scholarly articles on a wide range of topics that are mired in political correctness elsewhere. It is edited by Professor Kevin McDonald, who's no stranger to listeners of the Political Cesspool. There are quite a few reasons for the precarious state of our civilization and our people, but one of the main ones is that we have lost the intellectual and moral high ground to a cultural elite that is hostile to our people and our culture. Those of us who are politically aware must understand that the elites dominating culture and the political process in the West are intellectually and morally bankrupt. TOQ is the key. Digital download subscriptions are only $30 a year. Subscriptions by first-class mail are only $60 a year. Go to TOQOnline.com and click on Subscribe Now. In addition to receiving fascinating and informative articles, you will also be supporting the work of scholars who are part of a community defending our people and our culture with the highest level of integrity and intellectual sophistication. That's TOQOnline.com. Subscribe now.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
When we were planning the show earlier this week, I insisted upon having the first hour all to myself, and I'm going to read one more thing here, and then we're going to get into original content, I promise. And again, I don't want to be coming across as a lazy talk radio host and just reading a couple of things verbatim. I don't want to be Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh, but these two articles, the first one, Why We Do What We Do, and then this next one that I'm about to present, really just drive to the heart of the matter so beautifully that I just felt as though they should be put forth this evening. And so I'm going to share with you one more article here that came across my desk this week. 10% is not enough. 10% is not enough to validate this radical sociological experiment that is diversity, forced diversity, and multiculturalism. Anthony Bryan writes this excellent piece. It's a short piece, but it really, really hits the point and drives it home. He writes it for American Renaissance. This is what he says. For almost 150 years, the United States has been conducting an experiment. The subjects of the experiment, black people and working class whites, the hypothesis to be tested: can a people taken from the jungles of Africa and forced into slavery be fully integrated as citizens in a majority white population? The whites were descendants of Europeans who had created a majestic civilization. The former slaves had been tribal peoples with no written language and virtually no intellectual achievements. Now, that may sound harsh, folks. That may sound harsh. It is a dispassionate take on the matter. Is it true? Acting on a policy, he continues, that was not fair to either group, the government released newly freed black people into a white society that saw them, for better or worse, as inferiors. America has struggled with racial discord ever since. Decade after decade, the problems persisted, but the experimenters never gave up. They insisted that if they could just find the right formula, the experiment would work, and concocted program after program after program to get the result they so desired. They created the Freedmen's Bureau. They passed civil rights laws. They tried to build the Great Society. They declared war on poverty, ordered race preferences, built housing projects. They tried midnight basketball. Their new laws intruded into people's lives in a way that would have been otherwise unthinkable. They called in the National Guard troops to enforce school integration. They outlawed freedom of association. Over the protests of parents, they put white children on buses and sent them to black schools and vice versa. They tried with money, special programs, relaxed standards, and endless hand-wringing to close the achievement gap. To keep white backlash in check, they began punishing public and even private statements about race that challenge the Orwellian politically correct proved speak. They hung up Orwellian public banners that commanded whites to celebrate diversity and say no to racism. Nothing was off limits if it might salvage the experiment. Some thought that W.E.B. Du Bois, called the Talented Tenth, would lead the way for black people. And what is the Talented Tenth? It is a group of elite, educated blacks, and that they would knock down the doors of opportunity and show the world what blacks are capable of. And to be fair, and to be honest, there is a Talented Tenth. They are the black Americans who have become entrepreneurs, lawyers, doctors, and scientists. And God bless these people. I'm happy to work with them on any issue of, common ground. But the fact of the matter is, 10% is just not enough. For the experiment to work, the 10% has to be followed by a critical mass of people who can hold middle-class jobs and promote social stability. That is what is missing. Through the years, too many black people continue to show an inability to function and prosper in a culture unsuited to them. Detroit is bankrupt. The south side of Chicago is a war zone. And majority black cities all over America are beset by degeneracy and violence. And blacks never take responsibility for their failures. If there truly was leadership in the black community, if Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton were truly leaders and spokesmen for their people, they would advocate not excuses. They would be advocating for responsibility. Instead, they lash out in anger and resentment across the generations and across the country, as we have seen in Detroit, Watts, Newark, Los Angeles, Cincinnati, and now Ferguson. Rioting and looting are just one racial incident away. The white elite would tell us that it doesn't matter. And it doesn't mean that the experiment has failed. We just have to try harder. We need more money, more time, more understanding, more programs, and more opportunities. But nothing changes. Nothing ever has, nothing ever will, nothing ever does, no matter how much money is spent, no matter how many laws are passed, no matter how many black geniuses are portrayed on television, and no matter who is president, nothing changes in the grand scheme of things. Some argue it's a problem of culture, as if culture created people's behavior, instead of the other way around. Others blame white privilege, but since 1965, when the elites opened America's doors to the third world, immigrants from Asia and India, people who are not white, not rich, and not connected, have quietly succeeded. While the children of these people are winning spelling bees and getting top scores on the SAT, black youths are committing half of the country's violent crime, crime that includes viciously punching random white people on the street simply for the thrill of it. That has nothing to do with poverty. The experiment has failed, not because of culture or white privilege or racism. The fundamental problem is that white people and black people are just different. They differ intellectually and in terms of temperament. These differences result in permanent social incompatibility. And I'm going to read the last paragraph here, folks, and I want you to pay close attention. Our rulers don't seem to understand just how tired their white subjects are with this experiment. They don't understand that white people aren't out to get black people. They're just exhausted with them. They are exhausted by the social pathologies, the violence, and the endless complaints, the bottomless pit of grievances, the excuses, and the reflexive animosity. The elites explain everything with racism and refuse to believe that white frustration could one day reach a boiling point. And folks, we don't ever want there to be any sort of violence or ill will, but as we've said once, and as we'll say again tonight, the history of race relations can be summed up in one word, and that is conflict. You just can't have people inhabiting the same living space that have totally different views on life, different religions in some cases, certainly different heroes, different languages. All of these differences don't make for good neighbors. Now, can we respect all of the people that make up God's humanity from afar? Yes, we can, and yes, we should. But should everyone live together? I don't think so. I mean, I think you certainly want to have, in order to have a peaceful society, in order to have a forward-moving society, you need people pulling in the same direction. You don't have that in America, and you haven't had it here in America for a long, long time. And it's not going to get any better. And in fact, I think race relations are getting worse. And it's not because of people like me. Now, I'm called all sorts of names because I take a dissident view on issues as they would be presented to me by the mainstream media. But that's not to say I take an unpopular view. I think most people in America, and let me tell you something, I see people on the streets every day. And anytime people recognize me or this subject is brought up, even if they don't know who I am, without me ever saying a word, if it ever drifts into this topic, they are with us 100%. We don't have an unpopular belief system. We have a belief system that has been forced underground for fear of persecution and ridicule and losing jobs and being punished for not thinking in a way that the regime would have us think. But we're right. And, you know, you never like to paint with a broad brush. And as I said, I give all the credit in the world and I'm very proud of those of different cultures and different racial communities who are contributing members to American society. But as a whole and by and large, it just isn't enough to say that we're better off now than we were at this country's inception, or that we're better off now than we were in 1950. And is it anybody's fault? Well, it's white people's fault more than anybody for allowing it to happen and for passing these laws that victimize their own people and elevate those who perhaps, you know, shouldn't be in their position. So those are the two articles I wanted to share with you. And when we come back, we're going to take a call from New York. We got Matt the Copperhead on. Matt the Copperhead's going to be with us right after this next commercial break. And then in the second hour, we're going to be talking about another manifestation of multiculturalism here in the United States of diversity. Winston Smith will be joining me for the second and third hour, and Winston's going to be talking with me about the beheading perpetrated by a black Muslim man in Oklahoma, of all places, the heartland of America. He was trying to convert some of his co-workers to Islam, and when they didn't go for it, he tried to kill as many of them as he could until someone with a gun there stopped him. We're going to be talking about all that at length in the second hour. But first, Matt the Copperhead right after this commercial break. Stay tuned, everybody.
Whoa! This is big!
Not just big, it's the Freeze Dry Guys Giant Factory Authorized Sale. This month, save 30 to 45% off on number 10 cans of high-quality Mountain House freeze-dried foods from the Freeze Dry Guy. Factory fresh stock just arrived, so now is the time to stock up with the finest, best-tasting, longest-proven shelf-life foods in the industry at giant savings of 30 to 45% off. But hurry, supplies are limited to only the stock we have on hand. Call 866-404-3663. Free shipping to the lower 48 states. Click freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com. Hurry, the Giant Factory authorized Mountain House sale is going on now, only from the Freeze Dry Guy. The finest freeze-dried and dehydrated foods available anywhere for long-term storage.
Many of you have heard me talk about my Vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this Vigor stuff about? Well, vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called vigor. Would you like to improve your vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211. And take your free vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again. And, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or 801-669-2211 for your free vigor score test today.
We fought. We learned. We struggled.
We won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. While Winston Smith is finishing preparation for the second and third hours of tonight's live broadcast, we have regular caller Matt the Copperhead up there in New York on the line. Matt, what do you got for us?
Hey, James, how you doing? And Cesspool family, it's Matt the Copperhead.
I'm here in out east in Suffolk County, Long Island, and I have a very special dear friend that's sitting here with me, and regular listeners of the Cesspool and yourself will certainly know this gentleman. Without any further ado, may I introduce to you all tonight Lieutenant Gottfried Dulias of the Luftwaffe.
Wow. Wow. Lieutenant, good to have you again. I think it's been 7 years since your last appearance with us.
It's been a long time because when you went off the air, since then I haven't heard from you at all.
Well, we did take a little sabbatical or a brief hiatus for about 3 months in the early part of 2008, but we've been back for a while. Very good to have you on the program tonight. My goodness, if people don't remember, well, I'll tell you this first of all. You know, we've been on the air for 10 years, done 1,000 shows. We used to do them 5 nights a week. You don't remember all the programs. It's impossible. But I remember two very vividly, and they were the ones that featured Lieutenant Dulias. I don't remember how we first came into contact with you, my friend, but I certainly remember why we had you on. We had you on to talk.
That was a long time ago.
it was, and we were promoting your book, Another Bowl of Kapusta. This, ladies and gentlemen, of course, Gottfried Dulias was a former fighter pilot in the Luftwaffe in World War II. And you were enlisted as a pilot at the very end of the war, Lieutenant Dulias. How old were you when you?
I was 19.
19 years old. And that would have been, I guess, in 1945, correct?
1945, on March 4th, that's when I became a prisoner of war, pursuing a Russian Polikarpov I-16 at treetop level, whom I had injured or, let's say, hit in the gas tank. In air combat at 1,000 feet up, and he dove down, and I figured he has to land still on our side, and he kept on going, and all of a sudden we were over the Russian front, and they hit me with machine gun fire, and my plane was on fire, and he kept on going. So then I became a prisoner of war in Russia for 3 years in the gulags.
And that is what we had you on to talk about. We had you on for an hour or two back in 2007.
Yeah,
and folks, if you have not heard this interview, you've got to go back and listen to it. It is one for the history books. And as we begin to enter into October, which will celebrate a full 10 years on the radio, these are two that really stand out in my mind, as I mentioned. And we had you on, Lieutenant, to talk about your time. You wrote a book about it, Another Bowl of Kapusta. Kapusta was basically, I believe, if I remember correctly, cabbage. They fed you, got fed at all,
cabbage.
It was a little bit of cabbage and water.
That was our starvation diet in the gulags, Kapusta. Of course, I have in my book a recipe in there the way it's supposed to be done as a nourishing soup, not the way we got it. We just got green water, and on the bottom of your rusty tin can, if you found a little leaf of kapusta, you were lucky. And more eyes looked into the soup, and out, there were no fat eyes swimming on top. It was just green water, and you didn't need a spoon for that. You could drink it as a warm drink, and that was our main food.
And you survived that. And I know when we had you on, we talked about primarily the first time. We had you back on a second time later that month. That was seven years ago. My goodness, where does time go? But the first time we had you on, it was basically to talk about your experience as a survivor of a communist Russian POW camp. And there's not many that survived that. You were one of the very few that were able to walk out of there after liberation, correct?
1%. 1% made it home alive.
1%. We're talking to...
I'm one of the lucky 1%.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah. And then even still alive to this day. And thank God for that. If you don't mind me asking, how old are you as we sit tonight?
I'm 89 now.
89 years old and still with us, folks. Talking to, you know, you watch these shows on the History Channel. The History Channel, with their unlimited resources, would have to do quite well to find a living, breathing subject the likes of which we have here on this radio program right now. Lieutenant Gottfried Dulias fought for the Luftwaffe at the very end of World War II. We had him on, as I mentioned, and I'm repeating myself now, but just to accentuate the point, had him on extensively to talk about, in the first interview, his experience as a prisoner in the POW camp behind enemy lines in Russia. And then we had you back on, I believe, a second time, and Bill Rowland participated in that interview with me to talk more about the machinery that you used as a pilot and the different airplanes and all of the technical equipment. And that was a very in-depth interview. Bill Rowland really studied up on that one, God rest his soul. And that was equally fascinating to talk about the military aspect of some of the things you did and used and some of your experiences before the capture. So, and then you're here tonight and sounding good, sounding healthy and alive. And what a surprise. What a surprise. How did this even happen? I guess the Copperhead can hear me, but how did this actually get put together? Matt, how did you track down our long lost friend, Godfrey Doulias?
Okay. Hey, James, Matt the Copperhead back here. Well, ever since I heard that interview with Lieutenant Doulias, I've always been fascinated by that because what stuck out in that interview was that Godfrey had went to the Air Academy at Gatow in Berlin. And when I was a young boy, and I grew up in Berlin. Of course, it was a divided city back then. And it's just been fascinating reaching out to Lieutenant Doulias and talking, reminiscing for what? We've been talking, 5 hours now? And there's been some very interesting revelations and just fascinating stuff. We got to get on to at least a segment one time and talk about some things that we just cross-reference on a few items, such as when I was a young boy in Berlin, I was out playing in a yard which I lived in Zehlendorf, and a older German man called me over and said, because I was obviously playing military or soldier at the time, and he called me over and said, young boy, in English, perfect English, and I will never forget this because it's one of the most striking things that ever happened to me in my life. He said, why are you playing military? The war is no good. A lot of innocent people died, and plus, and it's the middle of winter in Berlin, pulls off his glove, and he's missing the tip finger joints of all five of his digits. And I was describing that to Lieutenant Doulias. And in his book, he has it where a guy had a train axle run over his hand. And it's just amazing. That was probably the same guy.
Unreal. How did you manage to track him down? that happened.
Well, and there is a an old flyer that was floating around the military collectors in Long Island that had a phone number and an address. And I just happened to call up and say, listen, I'm on Long Island. I would love to come out and talk with you. And he said, sure thing. I said, yeah, I'll bring Shooto from Glendale. So, you know. Never to show and up y'all been spending handed to someone's house.
No, absolutely not. And so y'all been spending the entire afternoon together and now making an impromptu call on the political cesspool. I can guarantee you this, folks. I don't think it's going out on much of a limb to say, and even though we've had him on for extended interviews, and I'd like to do that again, as a matter of fact, we've had him on for two extensive interviews in the past, but we could very well be the only mainstream talk radio program that has had living, breathing, genuine article Luftwaffe pilot on the air this year. Maybe the first since we did it in 2007. But this is real history. And if you listen to those interviews and how he talks, Lieutenant Doulias talks about his faith in God leading him through the trials and tribulations as a prisoner of war in Russia, the most bitter, cruel treatment that one could imagine. It's just a story of triumph and perseverance, and it's inspirational. And then, of course, Bill Rowland in the encore interview, it dealt with more of the military aspects of his experience. And it was just great.
That was just found out tonight. Lieutenant Doulias, explain about your soap tin.
Oh, yeah.
Just real quick.
I had a call from a friend in California. He said he has something for me that he bought on eBay. And he wants to send it to me, but somehow he didn't have my address, and so he sent it to my friend here that is also a member of LARA, the Luftwaffe Reenactment Association, and he brought it to me. And when we opened the package, it was an unopened package inside from a Russian that was selling things on eBay, and my friend in California saw my name on a picture of a little soap box, and so he thought it was mine, and he had it then sent to me, and we opened it up, and sure enough, that is my soapbox, what I had in my luggage that was left behind when I was a prisoner of war. And I have it now, 17 years later. I have it here in my own hand. still with the address, Dmitry Sizvodorov, in street address at Penza. Penza was where I was in the prisoner of war.
God forbid. Lieutenant Dulias, so great to hear your voice tonight. We're coming up on a commercial. God bless you. It's so great to hear you healthy and enthusiastic. And I'm going to have to ask Matt the Copperhead to get a picture with you and send it to us. And we're going to have you back on for another lengthy interview. Y'all enjoy the rest of your night, gentlemen. What a great surprise. The Political Cesspool never ceases to amaze even its hosting staff.